Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Jake Elliott. You found us. It's Lacrosse Classified on LAX All-Stars. The podcast is back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us here once again on Lacrosse Classified, presented by Extreme Threads and Associated Labels and Packaging. We'll get into our new sponsors a little bit down the line here. But first, I need to introduce my brand new co-host on the Lacrosse Classified podcast. It's Evan Schemenauer out of Saskatchewan and the author of the Random Thoughts blog on Lacrosse All-Stars. Evan, welcome and thanks for joining me here on the podcast.
Well, thanks so much for picking me up. I'm looking forward to this and really looking forward to the new format on LAX All-Stars.
You betcha, and a lot to talk about. We've been away for a little while, and lots happening since we've been away, and most of the discussion, of course, Evan, around the collective bargaining agreement, or lack thereof, I suppose you could say, in between the Players Association and the owners, the Board of Governors, if you will. At a bit of an impasse here is the season in jeopardy, in limbo, as we wait for a collective bargaining agreement to happen between the two sides. So a lot of the focus on today's podcast will center around that. We have a couple of special guests coming up. And Steve Bermel from Isle Indoor, Stephen Stamp from Isle Indoor will come up later. Off the top, we're going to have a bit of a surprise guest come on off the top. And then in between all of that, we'll have Peter Schmitz and Dave Sycamore from the Professional Lacrosse Players Association join us to kind of give their side of things, and we'll bounce some things off of them as well about what's happening in the collective bargaining agreement, what they are looking for to get a deal done, and what they think it's going to take for a season to happen. So we'll look forward to that all coming up. But before we do any of that, I think we need to get a little housekeeping out of the way, and we'll get my good buddy, my former partner, the color analyst for the Vancouver Warriors, none other than my man, Brad Schellner, join us on the podcast here in Lacrosse Classified. Bradley, this is a little bit different. We don't normally do this sort of thing. I'm interviewing you, which seems super weird, but thanks for coming on the podcast. What's going on, man?
I'm doing well. It's nice to hear both you guys' voices. I'm glad that this is an exciting new opportunity for both of you, and I'm going to be your number one subscriber. Hopefully, I'm your first subscriber on iTunes, and I'll be your biggest fan here on out. So yeah, tables have turned a little bit, but exciting new start for all three of us gentlemen, I guess, right now, fellas.
Yeah,
so new year, and we're stoked.
Well, not only can you be the first subscriber, but you can also say that you're our very first ever guest here on the new Lacrosse Classified podcast as well. So for fans that don't know, and I think most do, but Brad has been retained by the Vancouver Warriors. He'll keep his position as the color analyst for the new Vancouver franchise. I have not been retained, which is okay. Brandon Astle and Brad Challoner will be your new broadcast duo in Vancouver. They're going to do a fantastic job. But other than that, Brad, I know you're kind of pushing out some content for the Warriors on their website. What other things you got going on for the Warriors?
Yeah, so right now it's VancouverWarriors.com. I've been working on profile pieces on a lot of the players expected to make a big impact this season. So I've talked to Logan Schuss, Reese Dutch, Aaron Bull, Dan Lomas, Owen Barker, some exciting new guys that are going to bring some underdog quality to the club. You know, I think it's been a big thing for Chris Gill and Dan Richardson to find guys who kind of had something to prove. And I think Owen Barker is a guy who's ready for a shot at the league. He's one of those guys. And Dan Lomas, who played 14 games as a rookie for Rochester, but had to watch the championship run on the practice roster last year. And he's got something to prove, too. He wants to prove that he's a full-time guy, and he's going to get a chance to do that this year. So all those guys profiled this week. Chatted to Matt Beers this morning. That'll be up probably today or tomorrow. And then working on a piece about the right-handers, guys. There's 9 offensive righties heading into training camp when the Warriors kick things off, battling for, as you know, like 4 spots. So that's going to be an area of focus on how many of those 9 are going to crack the active roster on game day.
Yeah, I mean, this team had a rough season last year, 2-16. What do they need to do to turn this around?
Everything. Complete overhaul. I don't think Dan and Chris have been shy about stating that fact either. There's going to be a lot of new faces and new energy. This team needs to be hungrier. It needs to be younger. It needs to be quicker. It needs to be a little bit more well-rounded and fast-paced on offense. The ball cannot stall in the National Lacrosse League. And I think they're going to bring in some pieces of the puzzle that are going to swing that ball around and make sure that a different guy can be the hero on any given night if you can't rely on some of your snipers here and there. And, you know, it's been built around the transition game for the Vancouver Club the last couple seasons. And, you know, the Warriors are going to change that. They're going to go back to being a physical presence, and they want to be a pain in the ass to play against on that back end. So I think there's going to be some different leaders stepping up, a lot of new faces, and see what 77 can do in the between the pipes, because they haven't had any consistency there, as we know, guys, in a long time. And Aaron Bold is about as consistent as it gets. So I think it starts with him, starts with the nasty defense in front of him, and then a well-rounded offense. So this team's going to look completely different here in a couple of weeks, and I couldn't be more excited to see how they put it together on the floor.
You got a prediction on what the record is going to be? Will they make the playoffs? What's your outlook for the season?
Playoffs is a definite goal. Playoffs is a goal by any guy you speak to. They want to get there. I think you're playing in a division this year where you think Sask is going to be in. Calgary has very little turnover. They're going to be a strong team again. But, you know, if they're fighting for the third playoff spot against an unproven, unknown San Diego expansion team and a Colorado Mammoth team that have some question marks themselves, I truly believe that this revamped roster can get back there, get hungry enough to make a playoff push. So I'd love to see a 500 season. I think it's completely doable, and I think a playoff spot is definitely an opportunity for these guys.
What does their move to Rogers Arena mean to this team, and how is that going to impact how this team operates in the future?
The players are just so stoked. Like, you talk to any local player who's stepped in to Rogers Arena, whether it's been for a concert or a Canucks game in the past or going back to Ravens Day, like, it's a big deal. And, you know, they all have great things to say about Denise Watkins and the former ownership and, of course, the Langley Event Center. But the first thing that these guys say when you ask about what Rogers Arena feels like, and they say it feels like the big time. And they're going to feel like professional athletes. They're going to get treated like professional athletes. They're getting access to top-notch physiotherapists and fitness testing equipment at Rogers Arena. They're tapping into all those resources. They feel like they're part of something new, and they feel like pros. And I think they're stoked to be downtown. They know it's going to be a different kind of fan base, and they hope it's going to be a bigger kind of fan base. But everybody just feels like there's a real fresh start and something that they can be proud to build upon.
Speaking with color analyst of the Vancouver Warriors, Brad Challender. One more for me, Chally. I saw one of the tweets coming out from the Warriors Twitter account that the turf has arrived at Rogers Arena. Have you had a peek at that? And have you had the tour around the Rog? Have you been up to the Jim Robson broadcast booth and got the full meal tour around Rogers Arena? What's it going to be like calling games there?
It's going to be pretty sweet. Like, last time I was up in the Jim Robson broadcast booth, I was producing a Canucks game on TSN radio back in the day. So going from pressing buttons next to Shorty and Tom Larshide actually calling a game is an absolute thrill, dream come true, and something I never thought I'd be able to do. So I'm pretty stoked. I haven't been in there since the announcement of the team, so I haven't got a tour of the broadcast facilities yet. We're working on maybe broadcasting an exhibition game or getting a sneak peek at something coming up here if the season gets going. But just being in the offices, like the first time I went up, the elevator popped up on the eighth floor, and there's the Stan Smeal jersey, there's the Trevor Linden jersey, there's a Burray jersey. Just being in the building there is just so beautiful. And I don't know if you guys know this, but there's a brilliant tower on top of Rogers Arena, some businesses in there, some offices too, and some apartments. And they're actually, the Warriors have been put up a bunch of their players in those apartments. So you might be seeing some snaps or some Instagram shots of guys with like a sick view of BC Place and downtown Vancouver right out of their front window. Well, those guys are actually living inside Rogers Arena. So it's pretty cool for the players to be that tapped in. Literally just hit an elevator down, and they're in the gym inside Rogers Arena, and they're ready to you know, hit the floor and go toss it around. I know there's some problems with the turf. The turf actually came from Carolina, and Carolina got hit by a hurricane not too long ago. So I think the facility where the turf was being made actually had some damage to it. So I think it got here a couple of weeks later than we anticipated. But the turf has arrived. It started to be rolled out, and so is this team, and so is this club.
And how is it going to feel opening night? You had Jake as your longtime broadcast partner. How unusual is it going to feel not having him there?
It's going to feel weird. I'm going to have a little hole in my heart for you, bud. You know that. You know, always will. But I've done games with Brandon, and he's an absolute professional. We did the Man Cup together a couple of seasons ago, and you know, he's one of the best in the business too, and he knows this sport. He's been on the road with Vancouver in the past. He knows the players, and he's going to do a great job. And like I told you, Jumbo, when this all went down a couple months ago, man, like, you've got a voice, you've got a following, and I'm glad here you are launching this new podcast or this revamped version of the podcast and still using that voice and still trudging forward, man, because you got some important things to say and a lot of people that want to hear you from it. So kudos to you. And Evan, going to be excited to hear your thoughts every week, man. I know I've been reading your pieces every week for the last couple of years. It'd be nice to hear, you know, that voice in my head is actually going to be yours this time coming through the speaker. So that's going to be kind of cool. So looking forward to what you two boys are going to be putting together here.
Well, thank you, Bradley. You can probably thank Evan. It was his idea to kind of get this podcast back up and going and get it onto Lacrosse All-Stars. So a lot of thanks has to go to Evan. And I wanted to say that, you know, part of what makes a good writer, in my opinion, is when you read his stuff, you can hear his voice. So when I've been reading your player bios, your voice comes through right through the page on me. And I've really been enjoying that. And I'm going to miss you too, pal. I know, Brandon, you will do a fantastic job. I look forward to the broadcast and appreciate the kind words. I appreciate you stopping by. And best of luck with the Warriors coming up this season. We'll have you back on before too long, I'm sure.
Thank you, fellas. Yeah, anytime you know where to find me. Glad to be able to be part of the first episode. And you guys go out and crush it. Like I said, you guys got the biggest voices around, so keep using it. Use that megaphone, use that platform, and talk to you guys soon. Peace.
Appreciate
it. Thanks, Brad.
Color analyst for the Vancouver Warriors, Brad Challoner, and hopefully he's up in the Jim Robson broadcast booth before too long as the season's set to go. Just under a month from now, we're supposed to kick off here. And the next two guys that we have coming up here from the Players Association, Dave Sycamore, Peter Schmitz, will join us here on Lacrosse Classified. You got it right here on Lax All Stars, brought to you by Extreme Threads and Associated Labels and Packaging.com. Stay tuned. Schmitz, Sycamore coming right up here on Lacrosse Classified. All right, welcome back to Lax Class. Jake Elliott, Evan Schemenauer with you. Just ahead of having on Peter Schmitz and Dave Sycamore from the PLPA. And Evan, obviously a lot of things have taken place over the last 6 to 8 months, I guess. The players have opted out of the CBA, and there's an impasse now. There's been negotiations going on back and forth. Both teams have rejected multiple proposals. And here we are, just, you know, 3 weeks away from what is supposed to be the beginning of the season, and it looks like the teams, or the two sides, I should say, are probably further apart than what anybody would like at this point. I don't know if you want to give, like, a brief synopsis on kind of where the two teams, I keep calling them teams, I don't know why, but the two sides are at right now, and what you think is going to need or going to take to get it done here, or should we just get the boys on the line and get after it?
I mean, the simple fact is, for the most part, this was kind of kept quiet up until about 3 weeks ago, and then the players started to come out and be honest with the fans. And I know there's a lot of frustration out there amongst the fans saying, why didn't we know about this? Why it took so long? You know, the reality is a lot of the smaller issues have been worked out. But the problem really becomes this whole revenue sharing situation and how that's calculated and what financial information the players are going to get from the owners and all kinds of things going back and forth. You know, we got a game coming up in Saskatchewan on Friday, a preseason game, 8,000 tickets sold. We're finally going to start to see the first financial impact of what's happening this week. So I don't think we're going to have a deal done by then, but we're hopeful December 1st comes around, we got something done.
Yeah, the main kind of points that the PLPA is really kind of stuck on is getting revenue sharing from what they're calling five bucket items, and that is ticketing. So that's pretty straightforward. What comes through the turnstiles as far as ticketing goes, sponsorship, concession, parking, and merchandise. Those are the five things that the players feel like they deserve a share of. And really, I think what it comes down to is how big of a share are they asking for and how big of a share are the owners willing to concede on, and I think that's kind of where the impasse is. I think the owners are kind of looking at one number, and the players are looking at another number, and those two numbers are a significant distance apart from each other, and they got to find a way to meet in the middle.
Yeah, and I mean, the reality of the situation is, you know, most fans are siding with the players. They understand these guys are making an average $20,000 US a year. It's not much. But the flip side to it is, a lot of these teams are still losing money. So how can the owners realistically offer a whole bunch of new money and these teams just continue to rack up losses? It's a tough balancing act, and it's not going to be easy to figure out.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly it, is that there's a few teams, and Saskatchewan's probably one of them, that's, you know, on real stable ground and probably making a profit. You look at Colorado, Buffalo, Calgary. These teams are probably making money, not a lot of money, but they are making some money. And then there's other franchises around the league that are hemorrhaging dollars. And that's kind of where they're like, you're trying to bite off way more than there is to chew, because there's still franchises in this league that are losing money. And now you're asking the owners to pay out more money and lose more money. And, you know, that's just not good business. So, you know, I've always kind of been a player's guy. I've never played in the National Lacrosse League, but played lacrosse at a pretty high level, and always kind of took side of the players, saying, you know, these guys deserve whatever they can get. And I still kind of maintain that, but at what cost? Are you going to ask for so much that the owners are going to be forced to cancel the season? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because then you're not making any money. So I want to see the players get what's coming to them, but not more than what's coming to them, or not what doesn't make sense, if you know what I mean. And I don't know if their view on things is askew and they think that there's something there that's not, or whether maybe we don't know exactly what is there and they do, and they're asking for what they think is fair. So, you know, they've asked the owners to open the books, they've asked to be transparent, and they've asked for a lot of things, and fans are going, you know, pay the players. But I think that's because the PLPA has come out and been a little more public in what they are looking for and what they are asking for, where the league and the owners have tried to kind of keep it in-house and keep these negotiations private and don't want to get it out into the public on what's happening. And that kind of leaves the fans in the dark a little bit, Evan, and they don't really understand the owner's side of things. So, you know, I've had a chance to talk to a couple of owners and some executives throughout the league, and trying to get a better handle on their side of things, because we've only really seen or heard from the Players Association so far. And hopefully that changes. And if it comes to that, you know, hopefully somebody will come on the show and kind of go on the record with things. But, you know, for the most part, I've got some statements, and I've got some quotes and what have you that I'll share as we move along here. But nobody's really kind of stepped up from the league or the board of governors and say, yeah, I'll come on and I'll go on the record here, because they kind of want to keep this thing in-house a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we're sitting in a situation really where I think both sides understand a labor stoppage is not the thing they want to do here. Like, this league's finally got some momentum. You got some big investors coming into it. You know, San Diego's got a home opener December 8th. You know, they've been promoting that game for 4 or 5 months now. If they miss that, they miss a major opportunity to grow that fan base. And so there's a bit of a sense of urgency that we got to get something done here. But, you know, the last little while, we haven't heard much as to, is either side actually coming to the table with something new that we can bridge the gap?
Well, we're about to find that out, and we'll do that right after this short break here on Lacrosse Classified. Back after this. All right, welcome back to Lacrosse Classified here on Lacrosse All-Stars, presented by Extreme Threads and Associated Labels and Packaging. Jake Elliott, Evan Schemenauer with you here, and now joined by the Executive Director of the Players Association, Dave Sycamore, and the President of the Players Association, Peter Schmidt. Fellas, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us, Jake.
So maybe what we'll do, because we got two of you on the line, and then you have me and Evan as well, maybe when we address a question, we'll address it to one of the two of you. Or if you guys want to defer an answer to the other, maybe one of you guys can just say, you take this one, I'll take this one. So we're not all kind of speaking over each other. It's a bit of a unique situation here, having four people in separate locations all in the same line. So maybe I'll start. And Dave, I guess I'll start with you. Has there been any progress over the last, say, 24, 48 hours as far as negotiations go?
It's been very, very quiet since we rejected the league's offer 5 days ago on November 7th. It has been very quiet. We've been continuing to update our players, messaging them with regular conference calls, usually every other night, emails, stuff like that, updates. But it has been very quiet. I think the league is obviously holding conference calls and trying to what their next move is and look the games back on and get.
So Peter, you guys opted out of the CBA back in January, and we're in November. How did it possibly take 10, 11 months to get almost very little headway on this whole thing?
Well, let me take it further back than even that, because a lot of what we're trying to do has to do with the opt-out by the owners in the prior CBA. There was a 7-year contract prior to the one we opted out, and after 5 years, the league opted out, claiming significant issues relative to profitability. So at that time, we used a financial consultant by the name of Charles Bennett, who we've used before and is used by the NBA Players Association, NHL Players Association, the PHPA, the NBA Players Association, very well versed at sports league financials. And when we hired him, his comment to us, guys, I'm going to tell you what I find, not what you want to hear. And This kind of resonated with us, especially when he came to us in this last negotiation after having worked with us before and indicated, guys, you guys got to work with these guys. They've got a lot of teams that are struggling. You do have some teams that are doing very well. They have no willingness to revenue share amongst themselves. So it looks like you guys are going to have to take a bit of a hit in order to see that the league survive. So in the prior CBA, the current one, the one we just exited from, the players essentially took 2 games for free. They added 2 more games and did not change the salary structure. They also fixed the matches, the rookie pay, and then created a new level below veteran men, which in fact had that second-year player making close to 30% less than he would have as a veteran min. And again, these were fixed for 4 years. That kind of brings us to the current CBA that we only recently opted out of, where there's been some significant improvement to the ownership model. And it's continued to improve with Buffalo having purchased, interestingly, the Rochester franchise. Rochester will move to Halifax, but Buffalo will now have 2 teams in the league, and they did this without a CBA executed. In other words, we opted out. We're in negotiations, and the sale continued to go. So we had started negotiations. I think our first proposal was somewhere around March. So we opted out in January. By the way, the reason with the opt-out was in January was because we asked for an extension from the November original opt-out date because we had expected to get more financial information from the league. And we also expected them to have a proposal to us because we know they wanted to have it in more than 2 years left on the term. So before opting out, we kind of gave them the opportunity to come to us with a proposal for a longer-term extension, which we were sort of promised was going to happen on 3 separate occasions and never did. So they sort of forced our hands with the opt-out because the players had a few major issues that they needed to see addressed. One was the additional 3 weeks in the season that got added to last year without any discussion amongst with the players or the PLPA. unilateral change to the terms and conditions of employment that we took, what we objected to. And the other issue is we felt as though we need to have some kind of mechanism that in the event things continue to grow, the players would be brought along with it. We don't really have much of that in contract, say, the franchise fee, which is somewhat unique to our sport.
Yeah.
So we've had a series of we had a requirement once we opted out to have four dates for negotiation within 6 months of the opt-out date, and we accomplished that. Dave has a kind of a schedule of when the negotiations took place, but there was a significant lag in between, I think, the second proposal or the third proposal from the league, from us, I should say, to the league, and it went 10 weeks without a response. And that brought us up into, I believe, September, but Dave, maybe you want to add.
Yeah, one of our proposals to the league was on June 26th. We didn't hear back from the league until we received a proposal on September 5th. So if you do the math, I think that's around 10 weeks of virtual silence.
Did they give you a reason for that?
No, not at all. I mean, I don't know if everybody was off the grid and vacationing or what it was, or maybe it was just something that, hey, we know these things down to the 11th or the 12th hour, and, that's when it means something, and maybe we'll get at it then. I don't really know. I can't speak for the owners or the board of governors or what they were thinking, but virtually crickets for 10 weeks.
Speaking with Dave Sycamore, the executive director and the president of the PLPA, Peter Schmitz. Peter, is it common practice to use a previous CBA as kind of a guideline heading into a new CBA? And where I'm going with that is, you know, you mentioned, well, we conceded this 5 years ago, 7 years ago, and we gave up this in order to keep the season going and keep the league moving forward. So going back and revisiting that CBA, is that something that is common practice when negotiating things like this? Going back and saying, hey, do you remember when we did this? Now it's here. It's your turn to concede something.
So it is common practice to use a prior CBA as a framework and a go forward for a new CBA. Unless, of course, you move to a totally different format, kind of like what could happen with the part-time players we currently have moving to a full-time scenario, which is contemplated currently in both of our proposals. But going back to what I think your point is can we use the fact that the players gave back to the league, if you will, in the prior CBA and look to do a catch-up in this CBA? I don't see why not. Certainly, if the league seems to be moving in the right direction, and we believe it is. And on top of that, the reasoning for it was financial disclosure that they were more than happy to give to us when they were doing poorly. But now that we see good things on the horizon, the complete movement towards NHL franchise type of ownership that has arena control, has concessions control, parking control, merchandise control, much more opportunity for revenue generation compared to the old format, which is basically a principal that has to rent out an arena. We think that offers a lot more opportunity and upside for the players to participate.
When's the last time that the league opened the books for you guys?
Well, they claim they gave us information that we should be able to utilize Dave, correct me, when was that financial disclosure, or that the information they supplied to us? It was right around the first negotiation.
It was prior to us opting out, because we were trying to make a determination as to whether we were going to opt out of the CBA, which had to be done on or before November 1st.
Yeah, so about a year.
Yeah, so this past season, so that's when we were getting the information in from the league.
Okay. So, I mean, you've mentioned a couple of times that the new ownership's coming in regards to Comcast and Joe Tai, Francesco Aquilini, some pretty heavy hitters, guys with a lot of wealth and financial backing behind them. But is it not kind of the fact of the matter that there is still franchises and probably close to half in the league that are still losing money and significant money, not just, you know, thousands of dollars. We're talking millions of dollars over the course of a season. I know there's got to be some sort of balance there with, you know, the bigger players, if you will, and the lesser lakes, if you will, and try and find some sort of happy medium. But it kind of seems like you guys are basing your requests off of this new ownership model that's coming into the league when really there's still franchises around the league that are losing money. So where does the justification come in for asking for more?
Do you want me to take that one?
I'll take it. You can jump in when you want, Pete. But the justification is there's no guarantees here, but we want our players to be ATR, average team revenue. So if the league does well, if the league grows, then we want the players to grow with them. We don't want the players to fall behind. So there's not a hard and fast rule that players are going to go up this much or that much. Who knows? Maybe there might not even be growth in the league, so the players wouldn't grow. So what we're saying is if the league grows up based on average team revenue, that the players would grow up with it. So it's a win-win for everybody, and everybody has to look at this and remember that this is to be a partnership, and that's the biggest thing. We just want to partner with the league and make sure the players don't get left behind.
Is it a certain percentage that you're looking for?
It would be average team revenue would be the percentage increase year after year. So if there was an increase and that percentage increase was, say, higher than the increase in the mins and the max of the player salaries, then we would want the salaries to drag up for the next season at that percentage increase based on the ATR.
And that's on a year-by-year thing. Sorry, guys.
Yes, yes.
So, Peter, we're looking at this situation here. We're looking at hard caps, equal caps across the league. You know, you got a team in Saskatchewan that's got 15,000 people in the building at night. You got Georgia who, let's be realistic, 1,000 people in the building. How do we equalize this out when there's such disparity amongst the revenues of these teams?
And if I can add further to that, guys, like a lot of these ownership groups now own the buildings that they're playing out of, but in places like Halifax, Georgia, even New England, where it's a partnership, Jamie Dowick with Toronto does not own the ACC Center. I know you talk about your five buckets with sponsor, merchandise, ticketing, concessions, and parking, but a lot of these franchises are not seeing revenue from either concessions or parking. And some franchises are seeing that revenue. How does that all get averaged out? Are you guys now asking the ownership groups that own their buildings to supplement the owners that don't own their buildings?
No, that seems to be a misunderstanding here. We had asked that, by the way, some three or four CBAs ago. So because essentially they're partners, they can't play against themselves. So you either consider the rest of the league to be your partner or you don't, and you let them kind of fend for themselves. And if they can't fend for themselves, they go away. So we had indicated to the owners, why don't we don't have that many teams. So why don't you guys figure out a way to revenue share amongst yourselves? They resisted that, and we ended up wasting a ton of time. And they lost a few franchises, and then some of them are still struggling. But back to your point here about how we're looking to tap into these revenue streams. We are not looking to revenue share with the owners. We're looking to find out and to figure out to benchmark what their percentage increases are on a yearly basis. So it doesn't matter if there's disparity. What matters is what. Overall, take all the team's revenue together 1 year. That's the new benchmark, the total amount. And then if there's a difference in the next year of, say, 5%, and I'm talking total average team revenue, then the player's salary threshold, mind you, would increase that amount. Or if it's less than the minimum, of which is either 4 or 4.5 or 5%, those are all negotiations right going on right now, then it would be the greater of those two. So we are not looking to tap into the revenue share. We're just looking to tap in. We're using the barometer of year on top of year total increases on average to use as a barometer to increase the threshold. Now, within the thresholds of the veteran men and veteran mats lie around 80% of our players. And the league has the ability to negotiate within the men and the mats, and the players can either take it or leave. So they still have the majority of control as to what their total payroll will be. We're looking to just raise the ceiling, the possibilities, and also raise the floor.
Right.
So that there's a consistent increase.
And that's probably where the more concern comes from is the raising of the floorboard. Like you said, players or owners don't have to sign players to the max if they don't want to sign them to the max. But if there is a minimum and that price has gone up and the practice player minimum has gone up, that's maybe where a concern is for the owners on that side of things?
Well, it's really, in the whole scope of things, embarrassingly insignificant. I think their bigger concern, unfortunately, is they seem to be reluctant to partner with the players on the potential for increased revenue streams that may come out of the growth of this league with the better partnerships that are going on and the better,
so Dave,
arena, better sponsorship relationships that they can generate.
So, Dave, we're looking at a situation here. My understanding is the owner's counterproposal is based on a drop count or, in essence,
correct,
attendance numbers.
Right.
Is there any concern that those numbers are inaccurate? Because realistically, if drop count increases, all the other revenues should increase within a reasonable range of that same number.
Well, that's not necessarily true. First of all, you're based on the attendance. Sorry, Dave.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Pete.
When we got the published attendance from last year, it dropped from the year before that. So we don't consider this to be a true indicator of what revenues are. And on top of that, Saskatchewan sells out, for example. A lot of the other franchises are pretty consistent across the board. So you're not looking at the prospect of year-over-year increases of any significance. However, the league could start to create other sources of revenue. It could be funneled down local TV. It could be greater sponsorship that comes in. It could be a major sponsor that ends up having some of it diverted directly into the franchises. There's a ton of additional revenue streams that are going to kick in as the league continues to grow. And our concern is that we may be left out of at least having some kind of tie-in to that increase as things move forward. That's our biggest concern.
So
I can see just a follow up here. Like I can see a fact of, Georgia reports 3,800 attendance on average. Anybody that's seen a game there knows that's not the case. Is that a concern that number is being manipulated in any which way, or?
Well, we would be able to audit this. So we're not concerned so much about whether we're going to get the correct data. We don't think they're going to fudge it to us. I mean, it's not the kind of thing that these big boys, do. I don't think they'll want to get caught making inaccurate statements, especially, when there's prospect of a lawsuit from doing that. But I think that's the least of our concern. It's really more.
What's the word?
It's really more around the fact that it's just one of the five buckets, if you will, of revenue generation that the teams have access to. And in fact, it may have hit its maturity, and the players will not benefit, even though the league can continue to grow other sources of revenue. And again, that's where we're concerned about the appearance of not wanting to partner with the players.
Speaking with Peter Schmitz and Dave Sycamore of the Professional Lacrosse Players Association here on Lacrosse Classified. So the more I listen to you guys, Peter and Dave, the more I kind of feel like this new CBA that you guys are looking for is more geared towards the future and what is going to happen, potentially happen and probably happen and hopefully happen, rather than what's happening right now.
Absolutely. I mean, the way we look at, we don't want the players of today or the players of tomorrow to be left behind. And we want, like I said earlier, players grow with the league. And if the league grows, we want the players to grow right with them. We want to have a partnership here, and that's what a partnership is about. So it's important, and the players understand it. Our messaging is being very clear and precise to our membership. And everybody understands it. And they're fully unified on this.
Do you, with the new deal with Turner Broadcast Live, Bleacher Report Live, and these new franchises with San Diego and Philadelphia, and of course the Canuck Sports and Entertainment taking over the Warriors, is there a fear, or maybe fear is not the right word, but is it? Do you think it's a wise idea to jeopardize that new relationship with Bleacher Report and the rolling out of these new franchises, potentially missing a season and stopping all this momentum that has been created over the last 35 months by holding out and not having a season? Is that a risk that is worth it to you guys to get the deal that you're looking for right now?
Well, I think it's absolutely worth the risk. If you don't get it in now, when you have the kind of leverage that players theoretically have, and listen, I strongly feel as though our offer is fair. I don't think we're trying to extort the league. We certainly have a lot of leverage. We could be much more boisterous with our proposal than we are. I mean, significantly more. I'm still not satisfied with what we have on the table, candidly. But I think we framed it as a partnership, and I think we want to live by that. That's the reluctance to allow the transparency and allow us to have access. And again, with confidentiality agreement in place, so this information will not be distributed beyond our financial consultants. He would not even be able to dictate to us who the particular revenue stream belongs to. I mean, you know, to a certain degree, we'll be able to figure out if we dissected it, but that's not the point. The point is we're just trying to create a benchmark to see the improvement above on a year-to-year basis so we can tie our salaries to it. We think that's pretty darn fair.
Now, I understand so far that, you know, we've got a situation where, you know, things like the expense reimbursements and the players' salary while they're away from work have been fixed. Is there anything other than the revenue sharing agreement that's still outstanding on this deal?
Oh, there's actually term. Term's a big one. ATR is a big one.
How long of a deal are you looking for, Dave?
Pardon me?
How long of a deal are you guys looking for?
Well, right now what we have on the table is a one-year deal.
And they've rejected that though, right?
They did, but we still have the one-year deal on the table because we feel this is a ability for the owners to get the seasons going so the great fans of this league can start to watch lacrosse, so our great players can play this game. We feel this is an ability for to get things back on track and for the parties to continue to negotiate during the season to try to come to an agreement on ATR and some other things. I mean, the luxury tax thresholds is another important thing for us. The fact that we need that tied to the ATR, as well as some escalations for revenue streams built into sponsorship, television, and licensing, as well as group licensing monies. We don't want them flatlining. You know, in a 7-year deal, that's not good. So we need some escalations there. So you know, there's a handful of issues. And I don't know if I've missed any, Peter, but I think that's where we're at right now.
So I know you guys got a one-year deal on the table that they've rejected, but ideally, are you looking for another 7-year deal with an opt-out after 5, or You know, would you be happy with a 3-year deal if you can find some middle ground? What exactly is the ideal scenario for you guys?
Well, I guess our general counsel, Ron Jarvis, from way back when we started the Players Association 25 years ago, he says, if you make the deal sweet enough for us, then, you know, we would sign it in perpetuity. So with that being said, if the deal is good enough, then you always try to keep an open mind and look at it and say, hey, is this good for the players? Irrespective of whatever we do, the deal has to be good for the players, for the membership and the rank and file. We have the interests of the players at heart.
Peter, are you and the Players Association willing to cancel a season to get the deal you're looking for?
Well, you have to be. I mean, it's our only leverage.
Do you think the owners are?
Not play.
Do you think the owners are?
I'm sorry?
Do you think the owners are willing to do the same?
I think there's a few owners that would consider it, yeah.
Are there any talks scheduled between the two of you anytime in the future here?
Well, our phone remains on, and at this point, there's nothing scheduled. We know there's a owners conference call going on, I think, as we speak. I guess there's been some reluctance for them to come back with a proposal to us, thinking that they'd be negotiating against themselves, which we disagree with. But they know what our situation is. We've made it very clear that the ATR, the average team revenue, some kind of ability for us to move along with any expanded revenue streams. Again, and not directly participating. I think that's an important item that seems to be getting misread by a number of people, including, we believe, some owners. Our concern is that we maintain a percentage increase that mirrors the revenue increase on average that the league
Okay, so I just want to be super clear on this, guys, because I'm not exactly sure I'm understanding fully, and if I'm not understanding, I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I'll come clean on that, but I want to make sure our fans and our listeners are understanding as well. So if the league revenue as a whole, so that's all 11 teams, you pool all that money together, this is how much the league made. Say it's an increase over 10% of what it was in 2018. Say they play the 2019 season, there's a 10% gross revenue for all the teams combined. As the Players Association, they are looking to get the same increase in their salaries, 10%, to mirror what is happening with league growth.
Correct. Okay. We have a minimum built in, and then there would be effectively the greater of the two.
Okay, let me ask you this then, and God forbid, but say there is a decrease in revenue, would that in turn, would the players' salaries go back down?
No, there's a fixed increase. Now, again, let's not forget this. The owners have the ability within the mins and the maxes, and I mentioned before, only 10%, slightly more than 10% are butting their heads up against the ceiling of the max. The rest are in between. And the owners, since the player movement is virtually nil until you're age 30 or better, they can still negotiate within that number to keep their salaries in check, if you will, or their salaries at a level where they feel they can survive. The 4% increases to the min, or the 5% increases to the min, and the threshold rookie pay and second year player pay are not huge dollars.
You had a 1-year offer out there. And to be honest, I thought it was fairly generous of you guys to make that, because it takes a lot of your leverage away. What were the reasons given for that rejection?
I don't believe.
Glad you asked that. I said, glad you asked that. Two issues that were outlined in the letter back to Nick Dukavich. First issue was that he wasn't going to be able to sell franchises, which is obviously not the case. He had sold two franchises with, best case scenario, 2 years left on the deal, worst case scenario, an opt-out. And San Diego is the general manager of San Diego. I used to be the general manager for Colorado and is well aware of the prospect of us having chosen to opt out. The other interesting fact factoid is that Buffalo purchased the Rochester franchise, a new franchise, again, because Rochester is moving to Halifax. But since Buffalo, I guess, owns the arena there and the Rochester Amherst, they chose to buy that franchise, and that's a new franchise. And that was after we opted out, so there was no CBA in place. So the prospect of continuing to expand and introduce new franchises would seem to be something that can happen without a CBA of any length. And then the other concern he cited was player-owner relationships. In other words, he didn't want us to have a strike, which we had indicated in our proposal that we would not during the season. So the two major issues that he put forth as unwilling to do a one-year deal because of. In fact, we think it could be pretty well argued away by those 2 points.
So there was nothing really in the terms of your proposal that they disagreed with as far as the numbers and the percentages and the salaries and all that sort of stuff goes. It was more about not being able to acquire new franchises. And I'll give them some leeway on that, Peter, that, you know, for a new owner that's not familiar with the National Lacrosse League to buy into a league that is currently having a labor strike or negotiation ongoing, whereas the Pegulas, you know, have already been a part of the league and they know what this league's all about and are pretty familiar with the people and teams around it. So I think that's a tough example to kind of hedge your bet on there, but you would have to think it would be a little concerning for a new owner to buy into a league that's in a labor dispute.
Absolutely, but you have Buffalo that went ahead and bought one without a deal in place. Vancouver had already done it before. So they knew there was at least 2 years. I thought there would be at least 2 years left on the deal. I'm not sure it's a secret, but there's supposedly going to be an announcement for another franchise coming in this week, which could conceivably be pushed off now. But that franchise wouldn't start until next season at the earliest anyway. And so it could very likely be just held out until we do hopefully come to a CBA sometime in the future.
Couple more minutes here with Dave Sucamore and Peter Schmitz, the president and executive director of the Professional Lacrosse Players Association here on Lacrosse Classified on LAX All-Stars. Evan, you're up.
Yeah, we're going to see the first major economic impact of this labor stoppage this weekend. We got a game in Saskatchewan against the Mammoth, 8,000 tickets sold for a preseason game. How is that game likely off the table at this stage?
Well, I would say yes. I mean, it hasn't been discussed with us, but certainly they know the players aren't going to play if there's no CBA in place, or at least not the prospect of a CBA in place. And at this point, we're not anywhere close.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, let me take a jump back on, if you don't mind, on the 1 year proposal that we have in the place. It largely mimics the first year of the 7-year deal that the league has offered us. So, for the most part, they're the first year of the 7-year deal that they were going to, that they made proposal of the final best offer on, we were going to live by, with the exception of a few points. One was they want the franchise fee to come through the PA versus direct to the players, which is something I'm sure we can get over. Past practice was that they would pay directly to the players, and we would like to see that happen. Also, there's a new caveat they added to the missed work pay where the players had to leave prior to 3 o'clock, not to get too far into detail here. And then there also was a grievance that you probably heard about that was regarding the additional 3 weeks of play from last year that we had were still trying to arbitrate over. We had made a proposal for them to pay sort of in the way of a signing bonus that would have us waive that grievance going forward. But that's pretty much the only changes to the sort of first year of the 7-year offer they put on the table. So there really isn't much of an excuse for them not to accept it. other than what we stated earlier.
Can you tell me how exactly the process works? Say the league comes to you with a deal, say it's a three-year deal, and this is what they're offering you. Each team obviously has a player rep. You deliver the information to the player rep, and then it's the player's rep responsibility to deliver that information to his rostered teammates to vote on, and then come back to you guys with a vote for that franchise? Or does it just go to the player rep, he decides whether this is a good deal or not, and makes the decision on the behalf of his team?
No, right. What happens is our player reps are on our conference calls continually, and so they have the pulse of their players, what's going on. We also send all the information with respect to proposals and what we're thinking to the general membership as well. But the trust lies in the player reps and the executive officers, that have been elected, and also the player reps that have been appointed to transact the business of the Players Association, the players. So what happens is the player reps have the pulse of the players, and we look to see what direction we're going to go in. And then what happens when there's an offer on the table, the executive committee makes a determination as to whether that offer is set to be sent to the members for ratification. And if the executive committee believes that is not the case, then it doesn't go to the membership for ratification. I mean, this type of process goes on with all the other professional players associations, and it also goes as well in the factory setting and labor setting away from professional sports.
Okay, so there's no chance of a situation of, okay, say let's just take Matt Vince for an example, as I pick a name out of a hat. Obviously a well-established veteran in the league that's probably making max money, and he sees this deal come forward to him and has to decide, okay, is this good, and I'm going to present this to the players. Could there ever be the case where this deal is not good for Matt Vince, so Matt Vince doesn't want to sign this deal, but maybe it's good for 60-70% of the players in the league who aren't making Matt Vince money, but Matt Vince decides, well, this isn't a good deal for Matt Vince, so I'm not going to present it in that fashion to my roster?
I suppose that could be, but whoever it is that's elected or nominated or appointed as player representative, we'd like to think has the pulse of their team and also the respect that he's thinking out for the best needs of everyone on their squad. And again, they've got the balance of having another 10 player reps, not to mention the officers involved, in order to help see through anything that might be for the benefit of one and not the benefit of many.
Okay.
And we've had player reps at the table too in part of these negotiations as well. So they really have their hands on the button and the pulse of what's going on, and they know the issues inside out. And their messaging has been very clear to the membership, the players on their each and every team. And so there's full transparent communication from the executive committee to the members of the association.
Speaking with Peter Schmitz, the president of the Players Association, the executive director, Dave Sucamore. Guys, we really appreciate your time coming on Lacrosse Classified here. Just another one for me. Do you guys have a drop-dead deadline of when a deal needs to be in place for the 2019 season to take place?
No, it's really not up to us. The players are prepared to play when and if we get the CBA.
Are you prepared to play a 16 or a 14 or even a 10 game schedule if that's what it comes to?
Sure. We'll
see why not. So let's assume you get a deal done here in the next while. What's a realistic time frame to get the players ready and get them on the field for an actual regular season game?
Well, many of the camps actually hadn't even been scheduled to start until this weekend. So some groups are not getting their start is not being delayed. There are some teams, obviously, that have December 1 games, and those teams would have theoretically have had some time on the field already together. But a lot of the teams don't start until the week after that, and some don't even start until the week after that. So there's still plenty of time in order to get a ramp up with a good, solid, intense camp. And the ramp up, and as I mentioned, these players, not that these players are not in shape, they've been preparing to be playing in camp already. So, and they are continuing to stay in shape and working on their stick skills and whatever they can, getting involved in pickups or otherwise, so that they're not coming in cold. And remember, these guys are professionals, and they know how their body needs to be when they start to get into physical contact. So I don't think it'll take much time for them. Certainly there'll be a little rust on the shelf there for the first game or so, but everybody will have an equal position, be in an equal position relative to the conditioning and so on, and the team, the amount of time playing together as a team. So there'll be a level playing field there.
One final one for me. How realistic is it that we're playing on December 1st, the season opener?
I think it, you know, takes two to dance, and said earlier, you know, we're available. They know we're just, we still have the ability to negotiate with the league. You know, it's going to take the two parties to come together to get this done. So, you know, it doesn't get done, but it's, you know, these have to make it happen if they want it to happen.
Well, Dave, Peter, you guys are in mid-season form. I hope we can get something done here in the very near future and get the National Lacrosse League back onto the field in front of the fans where it belongs. Really appreciate you guys spending some time here with me and Evan and coming on the podcast here to lay out your side for the fans and answer some tough questions. It's much appreciated, and best of luck. Please get back to the negotiating table and get something done.
Thanks, Jake and Evan.
Thank you.
Evan, thanks for having us on.
Appreciate it. That was Peter Schmitz, the president of the Players Association, the executive director, Dave Sycamore, joining us here on Lacrosse Classified. A lot to digest there, Evan. Some good stuff from Peter and Dave on what the current state is between the two sides as far as negotiations go.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing I'm seeing here is it looks like both sides are really dug in on the main issue. So how they're going to come up with a middle ground, I'm not certain. It may honestly take one side cracking to finally deal with it, but at this stage, I'm really worried whether we're going to see lacrosse December 1st.
Yeah, I after that conversation, I'm not so sure we will, Evan, and you know, the players are obviously unified as a whole, and I would assume that, you know, there's probably the lower end of the scale, the rookies, the street free agents that are trying to make the league. They just want a deal to get done. They aren't too concerned about what they're making. They just want to bust into the league. They want to play lacrosse. They want to be a pro lacrosse player. And then there's the top end, the upper echelon players that are really fighting for what's fair and fighting for the future of professional lacrosse players. And then, you know, I would say there's probably a little bit of the same on the owner side of things, where there's the new owners like Comcast and Joe Tai that just bought new franchises and want to roll them out in front of their new fan base and get this season going. And then there's probably a couple of owners that are thinking to themselves, you know what, maybe a season off wouldn't be such a bad idea. Instead of losing $1 million or $2 or $2 million per year, maybe I'll just take a year off and save myself some money and hopefully things rectify themselves that way. So it's going to be interesting to see if which side is going to stay united and dig their heels in the deepest and fight to the bitter end and make it happen. And as we've seen in the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, these player and owner negotiations, these collective bargaining agreements are never pretty. And it's not something that any league players or owners want to go through, but it's a business and it's something that every league and every group has to go through in order for the sport and the business to move forward.
And just so the listeners are aware, we did reach out to the owners to have them come on today.
And with that said, Evan, yeah, I don't want to, sorry to cut you off, but I did get a statement back from the National Lacrosse League, and I do want to read this. I did have a chance to talk, like I said, to a couple of owners and some executives through the league, so just bear with me while I read out this statement from the National Lacrosse League. The National Lacrosse League has made great strides as a competitive and viable sports and entertainment business in the last 3 years. Our ownership groups have never been more committed and engaged to growing our sport than they are today. At the core of this success is the relationship with the fans, our business partners, our coaches and staff, and most importantly, our players. Our goal, it has been throughout this negotiation, to find a most fair and equitable arrangement to keep the NLL moving forward. And we feel that the offer we have put forward, which includes a very solid and fair offer, and importantly, is one for the players in the league to continue to build a strong and competitive and exciting business. That is our sole purpose here, the health of our league for all, and we look forward to continuing along that path for years to come. So there's a statement from the league, and you know, there's two different approaches here. Like I said, the PLPA has kind of started to move their negotiations into the public eye, where the owners have kind of said, listen, I'll talk to you off the record, I'll let you know our side of things, but we don't want to negotiate in public. We don't think it's professional. We think it hurts the players. We think it hurts the league. And they've kind of kept a lid on things in that regard. So there's kind of two sides to it, but I appreciate the league taking the time to send a statement. And who knows, if negotiations progress, or maybe if they go the other way, we'll get somebody from the league. We're efforting the Commissioner Nick Sakevich to come on and kind of give a state of the union on what's happening on the owners and board of governors and the league side of things.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to go on for a while. I guarantee we're going to be talking about it next week. Hopefully, a deal's done by then. But
well, I mean, I've
think
heard
it's going to take some time.
Yeah, I've heard that there's certain owners out there that are ready to pull the plug on the season now. So let me rephrase that. I don't want to be talking about this next week. Hopefully, we're talking about players reporting to training camp. Hopefully, we're not talking about a season that's just been canceled. So if you know what I'm saying here, hopefully we are talking about this next week, and hopefully we're not talking about not having a season, because right now, after speaking to both sides, I think that's a real possibility that they could just call it off right now. And you know, we've missed training camp for a few. We could miss the first couple of games of the season. We could miss an entire season. It's that dire right now.
Yeah, and we haven't heard any talk about replacement players so far, which I think is a good sign. I think the fans would be disappointed with the quality of the product out there. But, you know, where do we go from here? We got two sides trenched in. I just don't know when or where we're going to see a deal coming. This should have been hammered out months ago, but the situation is what it is at this stage.
You're right about that. That's a lot of talk on the CBA. We thank Peter and Dave for coming on. We're still not done here on Lacrosse Classified, presented by Extreme Threads and Associated Labels and Packaging, by the way, as we still got a couple of guests coming up. We've had Brad Schallner, we've had Peter and Dave. Now we've got a couple of guys from IL Indoor. One guy, two-time Tom Borelli. The chief editor, IL Indoor, Stephen Stamp, will join us next year on Lacrosse Classified. Then Steve Bermel coming up after that. Stay with us right here on Lacrosse Classified on LAX All-Stars. All right, welcome back to Lacrosse Classified here on LAX All-Stars. Jake Elliott, Evan Schemenauer, and now joined by a two-time Tom Borelli winner, the editor of IL Indoor, one other than Stephen Stamp. Stamper, thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's a pleasure. Nice talking to you.
Well, we just finished up a lengthy conversation with the PLPA, and originally we wanted to have you on to kind of talk about that, because it's hard to find guys that know what's going on, aren't really affiliated with any team, and are able to kind of speak freely about it. But now that we've had two real key guys from the PLPA come on and a lengthy conversation there, we don't want to kind of rehash all that sort of stuff, but lots of other things going on. Why don't we start with the Bagotway Cup? I know that's always a fun event that you enjoy calling back east there. What happened over the weekend?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it happens early November every year. It's the Canadian University Field Lacrosse Association Championship, and it's the final six teams. So we have Friday night, you have the quarterfinal games, which Nipissing was there for the first time ever, which was exciting for them. The downside was their leading scorer in the league was out because he took a vicious slash in their first-round playoff game against Queens. Actually had his shoulder dislocated. There's discussion about whether his arm is broken or not as well. which is really a shame because, I mean, it's Scott Domine, and he'd been drafted by the Toronto Rock and this year, and it was his big, you know, a big year for him. So it was horrendous. It was not very cool. So they're missing him. And then his best friend and roommate, Tanner Poole, who was also drafted by the NLL this year, is on the team, is the second leading scorer in the league, and he went and got after some of the Queens guys at the end of the game. He was very upset about what had happened and got into the official's face and probably went a little bit far. Mm. You can kind of understand why. So he got suspended. So they were missing the league's two leading scorers for their first ever game in the Big Attaway, which was not ideal.
No,
they lost to Brock 18-4. But then actually McGill played the host University of Toronto Friday night, beat them 11-7. It was actually quite a good game. Toronto put on a really good show, but then that got it to the four teams, all of whom finished 9-1 in the regular season, and everyone figured would be in the semis. So Western and McGill played in the first round. Western were the two-time defending champions, and they handled McGill fairly solidly. 11-7 was the final, I believe, and Western looked really good. McGill is a young team. They only lose one player to graduation. They're going to come back and be very good next year, but Western was clearly the better team. And then Brock and Trent met in the other semifinal, and it was crazy. Brock got up 3-0. Trent fought back. Brock went ahead by 3 goals again later in the game, and Trent fought back. Trent forced overtime, and things were looking pretty good. Then a crazy, crazy goal with Trent had actually tied the score in the overtime, and it looked like we were going to sudden death. And then there was just a wild play where the ball bounced off of Latrell Harris's shin over. He caused a turnover. The ball went off his shin. He's chasing it down. Player got called for playing without his stick, so Trent got the ball. Nick Finley, Saskatchewan Rush player, was taking off with the ball the other way, and Latrell Harris stripped him. An amazing play. They make a pass across to Campbell Parker, and he ran in and did this one-hand fake, then wide sweeping shot into the net with 5 seconds left in the overtime to win that.
Wow.
It was wild. And then the final was Western and Brock, and they went to overtime in the championship game last year, and they did it again.
Wow.
It was 8-all, and it was a great game, back and forth. Brock actually led for the entire game. The first time Western took a lead was in overtime, and Josh Wood, the Brock goalie, who was fantastic all weekend. He was really, really good. Was great during this game. He was there. He was going to be named their player of the game, and then I honestly felt sick for him. He had the ball, went to throw it to a teammate. He was out of the net a bit, went to throw it to a teammate, and it just kind of took off the top of his stick, went straight up in the air about 10 feet, landed in Tristan Simeone's stick, and Simeone had an empty net and just put it in, and that turned out to be the winning goal.
Ouch.
Yeah, it was a terrible way for the game to end in a way, but, I mean, it was a great contest and pretty exciting, really. There's some great lacrosse being played in Kufla. A lot of NLL guys.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Trent alone had 4 National Lacrosse League players on their team, but Latrell Harris, there's some other guys. Cody Ward was the MVP. He's been in some camps. So a lot of great players, really fun. And it was a great time down in Toronto.
And you have to think, given Canada's international prowess, you know, we got a great top end. We don't have the depth that the U.S. does. Tournaments like this can only be something positive to help grow that depth that the Canadian national team needs.
Yeah, I think so. I think it can help. I mean, you know, a lot of guys obviously look south of the border for very good reasons. I mean, there are some great programs, obviously, and great opportunities. But there are guys who go to the States and come back and go to Canadian schools and play in Kufla because they find, for one thing, the student-athlete balance is a bit more. There's a bit more chance to lead on the student side and really focus on your education. There's some great opportunities at great schools in the States, but being an NCAA lacrosse player is a full-time job, and you're kind of going to school around it, you know? So, and I mean, Latrell Harris, obviously playing for Brock, played for Canada in the summer. So that was pretty exciting for Kukla to have a player go over and win a medal. And it's good quality lacrosse.
I'll tell you what, the West sure needs something like that. We got like SFU and UBC have programs. We don't really have like a bag of the way cup like they do in Kukla. I'd really like to see something like that develop out here West. As we talk with Steven Stemp, go ahead, Stepper.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, actually, I mean, UVic, I know, has started a club team as well. There's a couple of teams in Alberta. I think Calgary and the University of Alberta both have teams, and we've talked. I'm the communications coordinator for Kukla, so we've talked to the teams in the Maritime University Field Lacrosse League and to teams out west, and there is a vision to make something.
All right, well, let's get it going, man. Enough of this talking about it. Let's make it happen.
We're working on it. We're developing the teams out west and out east aren't yet competitive with the teams in Ontario and Quebec because they're just at a different stage in the process of developing their programs, but it's going to happen. I think it'll happen.
Gotcha. I got one more. I know Evan's got a couple more for you as well. Evan, you go first, because I want to finish off with Stephen with my questions.
You're the absolute king of the NLL draft. It's, for those that have never seen Stephen in action, the amount of information he puts out there for the NLL draft is absolutely amazing. One thing we didn't get to with the PLPA, though, a lot of rookies trying to crack rosters this year. How is this delay in the preseason going to affect their chances?
I would think it would completely torpedo their chances, honestly. I don't know what Dave and Peter have told you at this point. I don't know where exactly things stand, but I assume from everything I'm hearing and reading and seeing that the camps will be shortened substantially because they're going to have to get ready to launch the season. So if that's the case, if there aren't long camps, I mean,
they're going to go with guys that they're familiar with and comfortable with and they know with. They're not going to give guys that they don't know anything about just a free look in a regular season game, right?
No, exactly. I mean, if you're a first-round draft pick, you're probably going to stick around. But the thing is, it's already hard to make a team as a third through sixth-round draft pick. But guys make it, and just look at Jordan Gillis and Joey Capito, and I mean, there's Kyle Buchanan, some great examples. But there's no way if you're a third through sixth round draft pick, you're getting a sniff at a team this year if you can't go to camp. I just don't see how it could happen.
Yeah, me either, man. Last one here from me, Stemper, and we got to let you go because we're way over time here this week on Lax Class. But I know IL Indoor is rolling out their top 50 right now. What number are you at right now?
21 came out today. We got a tie at 21, Joey Capito and Tom Schreiber.
Okay, so here's the question. Just tell us right here in Lacrosse Classified who was number one overall. And then a follow-up question to that, tell us who's going to win the NLL Cup this season.
No comment on who's number one. You'll have to stay tuned. But I would think most of you could guess based on last year who it was. And it was an almost unanimous choice for number one. The winner of the NLL Cup this year is actually really challenging because Saskatchewan loses some guys, right? I mean, they're the obvious favorite, winning three of the last four. They've got Evan Kirk's going to be more comfortable. They've got Connor Robinson coming in. I don't even know how he fits into that left side. They've got so much depth already. I think they're the favorites. My dark horse is the Buffalo Bandits to come in and actually make a huge rise this year. They've turned over about half their defense with guys that they've picked up in some trades and in the draft with Matt Gilroy and Ian McKay. Mm-hmm. And I am fairly confident we're going to see a big upgrade in net for them as well.
All right. So, Stephen Stemp, you're predicting Saskatchewan and Buffalo in the NLL final. You heard it here first right here on Lacrosse Classified on Lax All-Stars. Stephen, sorry to cut you off. We're real short on time, but we appreciate your time coming on, and we'll look for you to come back on a little further down the road.
Sounds good. Hopefully things work out. We have a season starting when it should, and we all have stuff to talk about.
Couldn't agree more. Steven Stamp of IL Indoor right here on Lacrosse Classified. Not done yet. One more guest to roll out also from IL Indoor. Steve Bermel coming up here on Lacrosse Classified, presented by Extreme Threats and Associated Labels and Packaging right here on Lacrosse All-Stars. All right, welcome back to Lacrosse Classified. Jake Elliott, Evan Scheminauer with you, and now joined by a new member of Indoor, IL Indoor, I should say, and that's Steve Bermel. The move from the beat writer for the Buffalo Bandits to the big website on IL Indoor, just talk about that, Steve. How did that all come about, and how are things going for you?
I actually worked for Indoor originally and was hired away from Indoor by the league maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And unfortunately, there maybe were some differences in ideas of what I could provide as far as content. And I reached back out to Steven Stamp at IL Indoor, and definitely grateful to be back working with them, especially in the midst of these CBA negotiations, as you guys have been talking about. I'm pretty sure I may not have been able to say or report a lot of what I've been given over these past few weeks if I was still working for the league. So I certainly appreciated my time there, but I'm grateful to have a more expanded role with Indoor, working more as a columnist as opposed to beat recap and kind of preview and recap guy. So I'm looking forward to kind of having, for lack of better terms, the training wheels off and covering the NLL as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, I think you and I are in the same boat here. Trying to get any information on the CBA up until the last few days was a difficult task, not anybody really saying anything. Where do you see this going? You know, do you see a deal getting done in any time in the near future?
I think, as silly as it is, both teams, both sides need each other. So I do think a deal is going to get done. I believe the league is in a pretty tender spot with these expansion teams coming in and with, you know, the Vancouver market changing. So I think that the owners need a product on the floor. And also the players, you know, they need the job. I mean, this is no dig against the players whatsoever, but in other major sports, if there is a lockout or a strike, they've got enough money socked away from the salaries that they've made. A lot of these guys, they need the money to play because lacrosse doesn't pay a whole lot of money. So I do think that both sides need each other enough that we'll see a deal done. I'm not sure what you guys have heard so far today, but I have heard that the canceling of games is, I won't say inevitable, but it's possible, very possible, that we could see a couple games. I don't know what you guys have heard previously with guests today, but I don't see a season being lost. I think it might just be a couple of games.
Yeah, I think that's probably the general consensus, Steve. I've heard as early as Tuesday, Wednesday, we could see games start to be canceled. I think there's parties out there that are, you know, more than willing to cancel the entire season if they have to. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. With that said, you're obviously a Buffalo resident and probably closest to the Bandits over the last 5-6 years or so, as you mentioned. Steven Stamp, who was just on before you, your boss, predicting a Saskatchewan-Buffalo final. What do you think the outlook for the Banditos is coming up here in 2019?
Every person says this about a team that they cover, it feels like they're just a few pieces away. And Buffalo certainly does feel like they're a few pieces away. Goaltending is a question mark right now, although a lot of people are trying to fill in the blank with what they think may have happened in free agency. But obviously that still remains a question mark. It would feel like if they were trading away Bouquet that they've got something lined up in the pipeline for goaltending. But they need a defensive guy. They want to play a quick transition game that involves scooping the ball up and getting it up the floor. And obviously with Gilray and McKay, both of those guys are going to provide that for them. And they should make a quick impact and a noticeable impact on the floor. They did not have issues offensively, I don't feel. It felt like the games where they struggled offensively, it may have stemmed from struggling in their own end first. So I do think that picking at 3 and 4 has changed the dynamic of this team in such a way. And then, of course, the coaching changes with Tavares and Kilgore taking over. That feels like it'll be a good thing. You would think they're going to be players' coaches. A lot of young guys on the team that really like being coached by those guys. Definitely will be a different style than what Coach Cordingley provided. So I don't know if I see them in the finals, but I do see a much improved team. Rather than being a bubble playoff team, I find it hard to find a way that they don't make the playoffs this year.
Well, maybe people in Buffalo have a hard time believing their teams are going to do well as the way some of them have played lately. But spoiler alert, actually, I do have Buffalo going to the finals myself as well. On the IL indoor side, what can we expect to see from you this year?
I am going to be writing one piece a week, be it breaking news, be it developing stories, be it some form of column or feature. So previously with my work with NLL.com, I would write a game preview and a game recap with a feature here and there sprinkled throughout. Especially with the CBA information, I hope that I have enough sources and enough contacts that when a story is developing or something is happening in the league, that I'll be able to reach out and get that story and hopefully get a fresh perspective on it. Because obviously there's certain expectations when you write for the league itself of how you need to put your story across and how you need to put it into writing. And not that it won't be professional coming from the IL.
But now you can completely trash them.
What's that?
So now you can completely trash them anytime you want.
Yeah. There's a certain degree of being, you know, of that I can be candid. There's a certain degree of candidness that, you know, I can bring as far as a feature or a breaking story. You know, there were, as silly as it is, there were a lot of trades that would happen in the NLL over the years that I couldn't say a word about because my role was to be the beat reporter for the Buffalo Bandits.
Right,
so,
right.
Like, when Iannucci was traded, I knew the morning of that was going to happen. And I asked my bosses at the league, hey, can I tweet this out? And they said no, flat
yeah.
out, because it wasn't my story.
I'm
hopeful now that I'll have these opportunities.
Yeah, it is. I got to admit, it is quite liberating to not be affiliated with any team and to not have a so-called filter on my voice or my opinion. So I know where you're coming from on that, Steve. Listen, sorry to cut you short. We've had a long episode here on Lacrosse Classified this week, and I think you've done a fantastic job kind of letting out information up until this point where the PLPA has decided to make their comments public. You've done a nice job delivering information to the fans as we've moved along here. Best of luck with the upcoming season at IL Indoor, and look forward to checking out your work throughout the year and hopefully have you back on the podcast here before too long.
And see, where can people catch you? Just so they know where to find you online.
Sure. Currently, obviously, IOIndoor.com is where we're currently doing our top 50 players. So you'll see some comments from me there and all the staff. But at Steve Bermel, B-E-R-M-E-L, that's the Twitter handle, just my first and last name. That's where you've been finding most of the CBA information that I've been given coming out. So.
All right, Steve, thanks. All right. Thanks for your time and best of luck, man.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Steve Bermel from IL Indoor, as we're just about done here on Lacrosse Classified. Evan, what a whale of a first episode here. A big thank you to our guests, Brad Challoner, Stephen Stamp, Stephen Bermel, and of course the president of the PLPA, Peter Schmitz, and the executive director, Dave Suckamore, all for stopping by the podcast. Hope the fans enjoyed it. Glad to be back. Happy to be on Lacrosse All-Stars. And once again, a big thank you to our sponsors, ExtremeThreads.ca and Associated Labels and Packaging. Make sure you check those guys out. We're going to gussy things up here a little bit as we move along. We wanted to make sure we got this podcast out while the information was relevant with the CBA. But the plan is to get some commercials going and get some ad spots, get some player promos going and all sorts of stuff here as we move along on the podcast. This is just the beginning, but thanks for tuning in. Hope everybody enjoyed the show this week. We'll be back with another episode coming out every Tuesday. Midday is when we plan to release it, and make sure you check all your social media channels on Lacrosse All-Stars. On my Twitter feed at PXB for Sports, you can find Evan Schemenauer at Evan Schemenauer. You got to tighten up that Twitter handle, by the way, Evan.
I got a brand new label today. It's
okay, lay it on me. Spell it out now.
S-C-H-E-M-L-A-X.
There you go. Schemlax is where you can find Evan, and you can also find his work at the Random Thoughts blog on Lacrosse All-Stars. All right, that's going to wrap it up. A big thank you to our guests once again, to our sponsors, and of course to you, the loyal listener here on Lacrosse Classified on Lacrosse All-Stars. We got to wrap it up. We are way overdue. Thanks for joining us for the fastest game on 2 feet and for the creator. We'll talk to you next week here on Lacrosse Classified.